Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Hey guys, this is Toby Mathis
and Jeff Webb,
and you're listening to Tax Tuesday. You see what we're looking at? Look at there's you, Jeff.
Hey,
you're looking good. Anyway, you're listening to Tax Tuesday. We got a pretty jam-packed one. Somebody picked like 15 questions. I don't know who.
Man, that person.
We thought we were going to be done in an hour. I don't think it's going to happen, but we're gonna do our dangest to try.
Yep.
Yeah, the good old thing. All right. Anyway, ask any questions you want live. We'll answer them before the end of the webinar, if we can get to it here. We have several tax professionals, including Elliot Thomas, Bio Sam, Tavia Harder, a bunch of Tavia's more bookkeeping. We also have Susan and Patty. Who else on the line? Susan, Patty. I guess that's it. So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then you and I, 6, 7. There's 7 of us to make sure that we get your questions answered. And if we can't see that little email address there, says Tax Tuesday to Anderson Advisors, by all means, send in something. We will, right here, we'll do what we can to make sure we get your response. If you need a super detailed, if you're asking questions about your specific scenario where we're going to have to do work, then somebody says, what's submitting a live? You're hurting us. You're hurting my heart. No.
What's 42. The name of,
what is that?
42.
42, who?
It's the meaning of life.
Oh, my God. That's the Hitchhiker's Guide
to the Galaxy. That's the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
You're such a nerd. Anyway, if you want something that's specific to you, you'll need to be a platinum client. It's a whopping $35 a month. I know that seems like a lot. It's cheaper than that gym membership you don't use. Right, Patty? Right. This is fast, fun, and educational. We want to get, unless it's like a, what's the one that's like 10 bucks now? EOS, and there's Planet Fitness.
It's pretty cheap, too.
All right. Anyway, we have a lot to get over, so I'm not going to goof off with you guys too much because I got to get back to boating. Sorry. It's Nevada. We're not done yet. We're still, anyway. So we have a bunch of questions. If a new C Corp is started, some of you guys don't like those. All right. If a new C Corp is started and the owner is the only employee during the initial years, does the owner employee still need to draw a salary even if the C Corp is not profitable for the first few years? We'll absolutely answer that. I earn bonuses on a quarterly basis as I work in a sales organization. Since the bonus is treated as supplemental income by the IRS, it's subject to a higher tax. Mm-hmm. Right. How do I reduce the tax hit on my bonus? What is the strategy to keep or protect that bonus income? We'll answer that. How can I live in a home owned by my LLC that is not producing income? I don't know. We'll have to answer that. Real estate investor startup expenses on education, classes, materials. Can I write all that off my taxes once my LLC is formed? We'll go into that. I'm a physician and work for a university hospital. Thank you for your service during these times. During the pandemic, I've been working from home. Can I get a deduction for rent? We'll go through that as well. I use the HELOC of my primary residence to purchase an investment property. This is actually a really good question. Any tax deduction advantages I can take? Really good question. We will answer that. I have insurance policies in India and would like to bring the money once they are matured. So probably bring the money in the United States. Do I need to pay taxes on this money? We'll answer that too. If I buy office supplies and inventory for my business with my personal credit card, can that be the owner's equity? I'm assuming that means you as the owner. But we'll go through that. Could I take out $100,000 from my current 401k according to the CARES Act and roll it into a different QRP without tax consequences? We'll answer that too. I don't think it's going to matter about the CARES Act, but we'll absolutely go through it. If I used a credit card to purchase stock, can I write off the interest I'm paying on the credit card if I incur losses? That's interesting. If Biden gets in, how far back can they go with tax changes? What happens for tax purposes if I want to sell a property that was in an LLC? Do I need to transfer it back to myself? And do capital losses offset capital gains in a one-to-one ratio no matter what your earned income level? Would $1 of capital loss offset $1 of capital gain in the same ratio, regardless of the gain being short or long term? Great question. My son and I both have solo 401ks. How can we partner in a buy and hold real estate investment without violating disqualified parties rules? And then last one is, I have an HSA, health savings account, for my employer. The IRS maximum contribution amount for 2019 was $3,500, and my employer contributed $1,500. The IRS maximum contribution for 2020 is $3,550, and my employer will contribute $1,500. Am I allowed to contribute this November for both 2019 and 2020 tax years, the remaining 2000 and 2050 respectively? I think respectfully is pretty cool, but I'm being respectful of my contribution. So we'll go through all those. So let's just jump right on in, because we don't want to be here all night, Jeff. You're just talking way too much. If a new C Corp, you guys haven't been around us. Jeff is a chatty Cathy, and I'm very, very quiet.
Can't shut me up.
If a new C Corp is started and the owner is the only employee during the initial years, does the owner employee still need to draw a salary, even if the C Corp is not profitable for the first few years? What say you, Jeff?
Well, this is a difference. I think we sometimes confuse people because we talk a lot about the S corporations and the need to pay salaries. Actually, with a C corporation, there's no requirement to pay salary.
Zero, zilch.
So,
and your accountant will tell you otherwise. So just let you know that this has been going on for 20 something years. We've been fighting with people over this. Compensation is anything of value. They could pay you with a car, right? Or they could just not pay you. The issue you have, like Jeff said, is with the S corp, only if you take distributions out of the S corp. So if I take money out of it, then I have to make sure I pay a reasonable salary.
Yeah, unlike S corporations, you can be a shareholder, you can be a director, but that doesn't necessarily make you an employee of the corporation.
That's right. So I can own Microsoft stock and they're not going to pay me. It just seems wrong.
I know.
So wrong. I need to get paid. But Bill, you guys got so much money, put me on payroll. So yeah. So anyway, what oftentimes happens is you'll set up a C corp, they zero out. I think 80% of C corps actually zero out, somewhere around that number. It's a pretty high percentage. Do you know?
I'm not sure what that number is.
Maybe they don't pay tax. I think it's closer. But a lot of them aren't making profit. In fact, you know, the best example was Amazon, which was losing its good tush the first 7 years. I don't think it turned a profitable quarter until year eight. The only time you have to pay somebody is if they're doing work and you're giving them some sort of compensation. You don't give compensation to people if they're not doing the work. So that's a good one. A few questions. We'll go to the Q&A. This is some of the live questions. Our guys are pretty good about answering all your questions. You'll see them answering them to the right of your question. So if you write stuff in. Let's see. I just created a Wyoming Holding LLC. I have an existing Washington LLC. To fund a real estate investment deal through the Wyoming LLC, I need to move money from the Washington to the Wyoming and then to an LLC. Is this the most tax advantaged way to do that? So Steve, and he's asking about a loan. So really what we're doing is we need to look at, say, who's the ultimate taxpayer. So the for what you're explaining to me, is more than likely that Washington LLC is owned by the Wyoming LLC. And the Wyoming LLC is a partnership that's owned by you. So there's no tax ramifications. What you could do is if you want it to follow the chain of money exactly, you go from Washington to the Wyoming to the new LLC that's buying a property. And you could just do that electronic transfer. But there's nothing tax-wise that's wrong with just going straight from the Washington to the new entity.
Right.
Doesn't impact you at all. There's no tax trap. There's no gotcha. That makes sense?
Yep. I mean, we've done it where it's either a direct loan, but in this case, if they're owned by each other, everything in that lower LLC is owned by the upper LLC.
Yeah, it's just you. At the end of the day, let's say that we have the holding and it's a 1065. It's giving K-1s to arguably two parties, but that could be a husband and wife, and that could be a single 1040. So all of these, what we're talking about here is this Washington and then the new, they're just owned underneath this holding. End of the day, it all ends up on the same tax return. Now, if they're different ownership groups, so let's say that you have the Wyoming and it has its partners. So again, here we go. And we have an entity down here, but we have over here a different company, LLC. even if it's down here owned by you, then the most appropriate route probably will be to either have the money go from the Washington to the Wyoming out to yourself and then into the new guy.
Yeah.
That's going to be the best route. Technically, you could skip the Wyoming and go straight to yourself. From a book standpoint, though, those two LLCs right there are treated as one. There's no difference between them from a tax standpoint. Make sense?
Yep.
All right. This is a good one. I earn bonuses on a quarterly basis as I work in a sales organization. Since the bonus is treated as supplemental income by the IRS, it's subject to a higher tax. How do I reduce the tax hit on my bonus? What is the strategy to keep or protect that bonus income?
Well, supplemental income is taxed in one of two ways. One is the percentage method, one's the aggregate method. If you're getting pretty large bonuses, you probably don't want to use the aggregate method, which means, say you get paid once a month, they're going to chunk in that bonus in with the rest of your pay to calculate what your total pay tax hit is. Mm-hmm. And you could find yourself in a really high tax bracket that way.
But that's for the withholding.
That's for the withholding. Well, and that's what he's talking about is the withholding part of it.
Well, that's, I just want to make sure. So since the bonus is treated as supplemental income by the IRS, it's subject to a higher tax. It's not a higher tax. It's a higher
withholding.
The tax is the same.
So yeah, the withholding rate, if you just do the supplemental, the percentage method, it's 22%, mm-hmm. which for me is not a bad percentage for withholding on bonuses and stuff like that. It used to actually be around 27%.
So what's that called?
The percentage method.
So he may be getting the aggregate method.
But like Toby said, remember, this is withholding. And if they withhold too much over the year, you get that back when you pay or file your tax return. Mm-hmm. It's just like any other withholding.
Yeah, you're going to get it back. So it's, you know, so what would I do? How do I reduce the tax hit on my bonus? Is you tell them, A, to go the percentage method. What is the strategy to keep or protect that bonus income? Well, you're going to have the usual suspects. You're going to have retirement accounts. So 401k, if your employer has it, if it's coming out to you, then you're going to have things like charitable giving. You're going to have conservation easements. You're going to have oil and gas, which scares me right now, but usually is pretty good. You're going to have real estate professional. If you qualify and create loss, you're going to have ordinary losses from another business that you materially participate in. You have all those things. Anything I'm missing there? You have your standard deduction, obviously.
Right.
What else? We have, you know, your mortgage interest.
Yeah, it's going to be all those usual deductions that you would have on your return regardless. But maybe the bonus is also being grabbed, like you said, by the 401k contribution. So yeah, you're getting a smaller piece of it because you may be putting 10% away into your 401k, but it's also not getting hit with taxes when you do that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's saving you, if you put $1,000 into your 401k, it's going to save you $220 and just on that bonus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, it depends on the employer. And right. If you're the employer, so it sounds like you're not the employer, you're getting paid through an employer.
Right.
So you're going to have to go to the employer and say, hey, what do you got? Otherwise, your shelters are pretty much what I listed up there. Oil and gas, somebody says, why does it scare you? Because energy has been getting the snot beat out of it during the COVID crisis because Russia and the Middle East are producing lots of it. We're producing lots of it, and demand is down. So at one point, barrel of oil it was negative. Yeah, you actually had to.
You had to pay people to store your oil. Yeah,
it was getting expensive. So
right now, oil's trading at 42. At its height, it was trading at around 140 a barrel.
Yeah. So until it gets normalized, once the plague's over and we're getting back to normal, then I'll look at it. Right now, it's a little bit shaky because you could dig, like when you're doing oil and gas, it's called the intangible drilling costs that you're looking at. And you can write that off as an ordinary loss against all your other income. The problem is if I'm trying to dig a hole in the earth to extract oil, and oil is cheap, it's not going to be cost effective to do it. So you're not going to end up operating the well.
Yeah, you got to keep in mind that intangible drilling cost, say you put in $100,000 and $80,000 goes into the hole, that $80,000 is gone. You can deduct it, but it's mm-hmm. you're not getting that money back until you start producing oil. Yeah,
somebody says, is buying oil and gas stocks the same? No, you have to be a general part. You have to be a general partner. You have to be at risk for the loss of the endeavor. Mm-hmm. So you have to be personally at risk for an intangible drilling cost to come down as ordinary. The ones I didn't list up there, you can get into solar. I did put in their conservation easements. Right now, the ones I'm seeing are between 4.7, which means for every dollar I put into a conservation easement, I might get $4.70 of deduction, which is reasonable. That's underneath the threshold for a listed transaction with the IRS. It's actually means you don't have to do anything special. You just get the deduction. What else am I missing on that?
I don't know, because you also have to be a little careful that if your itemized deductions before any of this is actually fairly low, then and you're married filing joint, you have to come up with $24,000 worth of deductions before any of these start decreasing your tax.
Oil and gas would offset.
Well, oil and gas would offset. I'm just talking about itemized deductions, like charitable contributions.
Yeah, all these other ones. Yeah. So health and mortgage interest and state and local taxes and stuff, then I have to worry about it. All right. On to lots of questions coming in. Let me pick. You guys writing a book. Somebody says, could it be he's saying his bonus is being treated as 1099? Nora, you're not supposed to do W-2 and 1099 for the same work. So I can be a W-2 employee and a 1099 contractor with the company, but I'd have to be doing different things. Like Jeff, he might be a W-2 as a CPA, but if Jeff had a catering company and we hired Jeff to do catering, I could pay him as a 1099.
Right. It's got to be for things that are outside your normal role.
Mm-hmm. Do you cook?
I do cook sometimes.
Yeah. See, we're going to have Jeff. Actually, every time I think about somebody cooking, I think of Hannibal for some reason. I just saw that movie again. I always think of Ray Liotta's brain being given to him. All right. Are there any firms you work with a connection with easements? Leo, yes. I work with a really cool guy, Tyler Surratt. He is an alternative energy guy. He installs and puts on solar units all over in Colorado, but also has for years done the conservation side. He has one main company that he works with. They do have one conservation investment still open. They're the only ones that I work with because they're actually doing conservation work. Like, it's not just for the deduction. They're actually putting aside large swaths of land from development that can be developed, has all the development plans, and they're coming in and rescuing the property. All right. Somebody says, does the IRS consider your business a hobby if you have not turned a profit within 5 years?
Well, the general rule of thumb is 3 to 5 years, but this is a subjective test.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually a number of tests that go along with that.
Yeah, 3 to 5 years is presumed a hobby. Now, there's a really good case of, God, what's the artists? I'm going to ask you guys. So he says, Bezos didn't make a profit for 20 years in Amazon. My brother works for Jeff, so I can't make too much fun of him. It was 7 years that Amazon didn't make any profit. They actually just ate a lot of money when they first started to get that market share. But that presumption is Section 187, and it's a rebuttable presumption. And there was the guy, what is it called? Peaches and Herbs?
Oh, yeah.
Clive Parker? Am I wrong?
I can't remember. I know
he wrote Midnight Train to Georgia. Who knows out there? Come on, we got to have some music aficionados. A question on a question. Does this 5-year rule apply to C-Corps? No, it does not. Ashford? No, it can't be. Clive Ashford? Is that really? Gladys Knight and the Pips? No, the guy that wrote it, Herb Alpert, Toby and the Pips? No, Clive Davis. There we go. It's Clive Davis. Somebody gets it. Who got it? Was that? Look at Seth. Seth, you got the singer of it right, but you didn't get the writer of the song. The Peaches and Herbs guy was Clive Davis. And then his kid, he started a music label and lost money, like $38 million trying to make his kid famous. And he lost money for more than a decade. I want to say it was even longer. Like, it was some ridiculous amount of money over a long, long period of time. And the IRS said, you were a hobby. And what they look at is, did you act like a business? Did you try to make a profit? Mm-hmm. Did you use professionals? They always look to see, did you hire a lawyer? Did you have an accountant? And guess what?
Yeah, if you read all of 187, it quickly becomes obvious. They're wanting to know if you're really trying to make a profit.
Yeah, and he did fine. He ended up winning. But his winning was, can I actually write off all these? Because he was getting all these huge royalties from his music, and he ended up writing it off. Some of you guys are still... Wait, Jim Weatherly? No, it is. It's Clive Davis. And somebody says Jim Weatherly wrote it. No, I don't think so. I think it's Clive Davis is a musical producer. Maybe he produced it. All right, I suck. So it's Clive Davis, though, I'm pretty sure. I'll go look it up. Well, next time we'll have some fun with this one because it's a really weird case. And it's such a huge amount of money. Like, he was dumping millions of dollars into it and never made his kid famous. All right, so somebody says, I've done conservation easement. I understand that all conservation easements are under scrutiny. You mentioned that 4.7 is under the radar. What's the top level that will not be questioned? So what it is, Bill, is it's a listed transaction if it's more than 250%. So five times. You go over five times, you have to let the IRS know that I'm investing in it. And they're auditing the syndicator, the person who puts it together. And there's nothing wrong with it. In fact, you want them to audit it because sometimes the audits are in your favor because they're saying, hey, what's the fair market value? If you're doing it right, you have all that information before you even start. So like the ones that I send people to, they're buttoned down. They already have the development. And so in this particular case, the one that's open right now, it's in Vail, Colorado, and they have all the development plans. They actually have the memorandum to actually do the development. They've already developed other lots, and they're just taking a big chunk of it and offering it for conservation. And so the fair market value of that deal is worth about $40 million developed. It's worth about $10 million, something. Let's see. Somebody's saying it was performed by Jim Weatherly, Midnight, and then he recorded it. Line. Okay. So, but I know that. Okay. Maybe Clive is the producer. So you guys got me on that one. Clive Davis. See, now I went down a path of no redemption here. All right. So how can I live in a home owned by my LLC that is not producing income?
I just think putting your primary residence in an LLC is a really bad idea.
You can do it.
You can do it, but doesn't it really mess with your 121 exclusion?
So if it's a disregarded LLC, it doesn't hurt your 121 exclusion. What an LLC can cost you, depending on the state, there's only two states we really worry about, is whether it's going to cost you an unlimited exclusion, the equity in it, the unlimited homestead. And that's Texas and Florida. We don't want to mess with, we know the living trust is fine, but Florida, I think we screw it up if we go the LLC route. It's one of the two.
If it's owned by husband and wife, does that make a difference?
As long as that LLC is disregarded for tax purposes, it's disregarded for tax purposes, for all federal tax purposes. But then
the husband and wife would both have to be owners of the LLC.
Correct. Husband and wife would have to be owners of the LLC, but they would have to be living in a community property state. If you put your house into a LLC that is owned by husband and wife in a separate property state, you're going to want to have a living trust. And one of them is trustee being the owner. So then the living trust would be the owner, and we convert it inside the living trust back to community property. But you'd have to have some pretty serious equity. And you know, I'll give you the example is if you're in California with $2 million of equity in your property, you don't have much of a homestead exclusion. It's less than $100,000. Mm-hmm. So you have $2 million exposed to whomever might want to try to come after it. Then I might see somebody putting in an LLC. And realistically, we're probably going to use a land trust so that you're not putting your, you know, anybody on notice, privacy trust. So anyway.
Now we don't talk about the QPERTs much.
Qualified Personal Residence Trust.
Right. Do they offer any kind of protection?
Yeah. QPERT is I give you my property. Mm-hmm. I give the trust with you as the beneficiary, my property with a lifetime right to occupy it.
Okay.
So that way, worst case scenario, I get sued for everything and I still get to stay in the house. And it's your house. Nobody can take it away from you. They use those a lot when they're trying to get properties out of an estate.
Okay.
Somebody's asking about the 121 exclusion. I have lived in my property owned by my LLC, which I'm selling. Is there any problem with claiming personal residence exclusion? You shouldn't have an issue because when it's disregarded for tax purposes, it's disregarded. So the IRS says it doesn't exist. And if it doesn't exist, then it's you. And so for you, all you have to do is make sure you lived in it as your personal residence two of the last 5 years. Anyway, so when people use it, it's not you don't have to be renting it or anything like that. You can, as long as it's you, then you as the LLC are just a taxpayer. If that LLC is taxed as an S corp or a C corp, it's a complete different story because that's a different taxpayer. So we don't like your home to be owned by a corporation. And an LLC, if you remember, does not exist to the IRS. That LLC, the IRS says, what is it? And then you say what it is. So you're going to say either partnership, it's a corp, it's a trust. Like you're gonna tell the IRS what it is. So that's that. All right, what do we got? We got a bunch of questions here. By the way, Wyoming LLC is disregarded. Okay, that was from the previous one, which means there's no tax. So our previous answers stand, which is good. We recently formed a C Corp to manage our existing LLC. Is there a compelling reason to create the C Corp bank account at a different bank than where we have our LLC and personal bank accounts? We have a great relationship and services with our current banker. So, Chris, the only compelling reason you'd ever have when you have cash at an institution from not necessarily having it at that institution is if you have a loan with that institution. So during the Great Recession of 2008, there was a few banks that when they would get nervous about a loan not being paid, they would just grab your bank account, whether you were late or not. And that happened to plenty of our clients where we would see it. And then they'd fight and they would go after the bank, but it took months. They'd have to get lawyers involved. And the bank was just scared that they were going to walk out of their house. And so in Nevada, it was rampant here. So I had friends that had it happen to. So if you're sitting there, you have 100 grand sitting in your bank account and you have a mortgage of 300,000, they could just grab your bank account. So if you're worried at all, or if that's all your cash, you may want to spread it between a couple institutions where you don't have debt. That's the only thing. Somebody says, don't you have to pay back depreciation? Where were we talking about depreciation?
No, we weren't.
Yeah, you don't have to pay back depreciation. And they might be thinking of a home office or something. Now, you recapture depreciation. But in that particular case, maybe it was going back to the house. You're not renting it, so you're not required to do depreciation on the previous question. So there's no depreciation on this one, just so you know. You only charge depreciation when it's an investment property. If you're living in it, it's not an investment property. If you are renting it, then it becomes an investment property and you may take depreciation, but you must recapture depreciation as though you took it. So it could be really brutal and it could be pretty darn ugly if you, like some people have a second property and they're leasing it to a child or to a friend or to a relative and they're charging a little bit and they don't take depreciation. Maybe they're not even charging for it. They just say, hey, you're staying in it. The IRS has the right to come through and say, that's an investment property.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you were gifting them the lease, that was put into service to a third party. That wasn't your home. And we're going to treat it as though you depreciated it and force you to pay up to 25% on the amount that you could have depreciated, whether you did it or not. So fun stuff. All right, another question. Real estate investor startup expenses on education, classes, materials. Can I write that off my taxes once my LLC is formed?
If you're investing personally in real estate, I'm not a big fan of taking those startup expenses there. Because what you end up having is you have this Schedule E that has your rental income expenses on it, and then these humongous educational expenses that stick out like a sore thumb.
Mm-hmm. Where would you take it?
I would actually have a corporation managing my rental properties, and I would take those type of expenses in the corporation.
Yeah, that's generally how we teach it. So when you're an investor, it's a different world. There's actually a case, I think it's Woody v. Commissioner, that was somebody that we actually consulted with before they ran off and did what their accountant told them to do anyway. We told them, you better set up a corporation to grab your expenses because they become a startup expense, but the corporation has to make money really before it's going to get to write it off. But when you're an investor, you're not in business until the day you start that little thing called rents. Everything before that, no business. So you get no deduction for it.
Right.
And so if you had a bunch of educational expenses, you're not going to get it. With the corporation, you can look back and you can go back in time and you can grab all the expenses, but then you're paying them out of money that comes in the future. So a little nuance there. We don't want you to goof around. So the only other way that I would answer this differently is if this LLC, if it's taxed as a corp, but you wouldn't be doing that if you're an investor and you're putting the properties in it. So I'm just going to put how it's taxed is kind of a question mark.
We've also seen people try to do this on Schedule C, their self-employment income, put their education costs. I've seen a lot of them audit it. I've yet to see anybody win one of those cases.
There's a difference between being a trader business or an investor, and there's a distinction between it. So if you're an investor, like if you're already in real estate, you already have a bunch of rentals and you go to a course, by all means, feel free, because you're already in service. You're already in business. But if you haven't started, then absolutely don't. I wouldn't be trying to write that off on my personal return.
I agree.
Yeah, you'd want it going into a corporation, just because the corporation, if it's a management corp, it's in business the day that it starts. Whereas you as an investor, you're going to have to, until you have the items in service, they're not going to consider you in business. How about a licensed broker, continuing education? Then you're fine. You're a business. So you can write off your education.
Right.
As long as it's in line with what you're doing.
And we'll see that like on Schedule C, where a guy may run an HVAC business and he sends all his people off for training on new systems. That's all fully deductible.
Yep.
Because you're in that business.
But the example is, let's say that I am in the real estate business and I go to law school. I can't write off the law school because it's not in my line of business.
Correct.
It's preparing me for a new line of business. Somebody says, so if you already have a rental and not an LLC, is okay to write off real estate related trainings? Yeah, you're just writing them off on your Schedule E at that point.
Right.
So as long as you already have rentals, you're going to be fine. I still tend to take them in the corp, just me, because I don't want to fight with the IRS, because you're kind of putting a bullseye on your forehead. I don't want a bullseye on my forehead. I don't know about you.
No, no target on my back, no bullseye on my forehead.
And the safe bet is to use a C corp. Somebody says, can you use an S or a C? I would say the C corp is not subject to 187, which is the hobby loss rules. It's a business just because it is. And the losses stay inside the corp, but the corp also only pays 21%. So can a C corp manage rentals held in the owner's name, or do they have to be inside of an LLC? Technically, it could manage properties in your name, but I wouldn't do that. You're always going to want an LLC around rental properties. So it's not a technical requirement, but our recommendation is don't own investment properties in your name, period. You're inviting troubles. The biggest vicious takings that I've ever seen, almost all of them happen to be with real estate in individuals' names, where they would lose everything. It's because they own something in their name and they said, it's just one little piece of real estate.
Yeah, putting a property in your name makes your pockets just a little deeper.
Deeper, and you never know when you're going to have that situation. We've seen fires. We've seen trees fall on things. We've seen electrocutions. We've seen, carports fall on workers. You've seen so much stuff. You just don't want to be sitting there messing around with it. And even when you have a $3 million
umbrella,
and they sit there and say, oh, I'm still covered. No, you wait. The big ones where I've seen people lose everything, it was almost always the insurance company was denying. Actually, I saw just the biggest bankruptcy ever seen. We had to sue to get some of our assets back out of it. It was a company, and it got bankrupted by an earthquake. It was making over $100 million a year, and their building cracked, and the water shot into the building. And the insurance company denied it. And the cost of fixing it and moving their staff and continuing to operate caused them to go into bankruptcy and lose everything. So Toby is the new Farmers Insurance spokesperson. Dun, 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 dun.
It's happened. We've seen it.
Yeah, we have seen it. I was like, the weirdest thing. That was in Tukwila, Washington, and a property line, or the water line, broke and shot up into the building, a four-story building. And just decimated it. And then the insurance company declined, saying that the $6 million policy was really a $600,000 policy. And they moved to zero. And the agent was like, no, it was $6 million. The money is like everything. They ended up fighting it, but they ended up fighting it in a bankruptcy court. So, yeah, don't do it. Please put your rental real estate in an LLC. Please. And if you're flipping properties, keep them out of your name, too. You just don't want it. I actually saw in that, well, it wasn't saw, but I got to be working with the client who was going through the litigation of having been 11th in line on a property. So he had flipped it years prior, and the property had flipped and flipped and flipped and flipped, and he was number 11, and they sued him and named him in the lawsuit over something that was wrong with the land. They sued everybody that was in the chain of title. So how do we get it inside the LLC? Reach out, Patty, have somebody sit down with you and go over it. It's not that hard. Depends on whether there's debt. Usually we're going to use it, depending on the state. Some states, it's not a big deal. If you're in Pennsylvania and putting in an LLC is a taxable transaction, everywhere else it isn't. if you have a loan on it, well, you usually use a land trust to keep the loan from being called due. We actually teach this in the tax and AP course. So they're free. So you might want to go to a tax and AP course. If you guys are Tax Tuesday, you can always go. Patty, if you could share them a link. We have an event coming up the Saturday after this one. But if you really want to learn this stuff and you want to learn how to structure your real estate, that's a great place to go. Then you're going to learn a bunch of tax anyway. They're one day right now. We do them because we're doing them via Zoom. I am a physician and work for a university hospital. During the pandemic, I've been working from home. Can I get a deduction for rent?
Unfortunately, if you are a W-2 employee of the university hospital, there is no deduction for unreimbursed employee expenses.
All right. So question, are you W-2? No. Bueno. If you're 1099, yes.
Correct.
Because your 1099 can decide, hey, we're going to have an administrative office in the house. Or if you're 1099 and a sole proprietor, you're just going to write off a home office, which will be a lot less. So the best route is if you're 1099, you're going to want to be S Corp or LLC taxed as S Corp or a C Corp or LLC taxed as C Corp. And your personal situation would dictate which one's going to be the best for you. So anyway, you mentioned a tax seminar on Saturday for structuring. Okay, so there's the event. Actually, we have a few different ones coming up. I had a really cool one on Saturday. We did the residential assisted living for senior housing with Gene, which is always fun. I've done that twice with him now. Been working with Gene for years, but this year we've been really zeroing in on trying to help the seniors out. So there's tax and AP, and then I also have TaxWise, which is all tax, coming up on December 1st. But I think you have to be you have to have the tax toolbox to get into that, or you're paying for that separate. Some of you guys may actually have purchased it last year and be entitled to all of them for this year. Anyway, that's always fun. Q&A, lots of questions. Oh, did I even answer this one?
Yes, we did.
All right. Phew. Sometimes I forget. Right. All right. We received an email today requiring our SBA loan, stating the next. Your business was recently approved for an economic injury disaster loan for the U.S. small business. The executed loan authorization agreement contains a requirement for collateral, which require written consent on the collateral securing this loan. The requirement has been determined by the SBA to be unnecessary, and as a result has been removed. All right. So what that is when you get, some of you guys know this, there's the economic injury disaster loans, which are the EIDL loans you hear about. Imagine that you had a hurricane hit you and it messed up your business. The SBA has disaster loans. Mm-hmm. Well, when the pandemic hit us, it messed up our businesses. So the SBA said, we're in a national disaster area, the whole country, and we'll give you loans up to $2 million, which quickly became $150,000 because everybody wanted these loans. The 30-year loans, for-profit was 3.75%. The non-for-profits got 2.75%. But the cool part was there was no personal guarantee. They did have the right, if the loan was over $25,000, to request collateral. And so they said, hey, we want to be able to file UCCs against your assets in your business. So what they're sending you, Angela, is they're sending you a form saying, you don't have a bunch of assets. You know, they're going to look at your balance sheet that you provided, and they're going to say, is there anything there that we want to secure? No. I doubt they're going to secure any loan. There's too many of them. They did, get this, they did more loans in 14 days than they had done in the previous 14 years combined. This year, the SBA. I was actually shocked that the SBA processed the EIDL loans. They were really, really slow. They were supposed to be getting stuff turned around in 72 hours, and it was taking them months. But we got millions of dollars for our clients. I know that we were working that. So like our guys were working, I don't want to say 24/7, but they were literally working all weekend, working late at night. We had teams working on those things pretty much around the clock, early until late, constantly trying to get our clients money. Because we know it was really important to y'all. A lot of you guys have been shut down. A lot of you guys have been going through financial turmoil. We've been trying to get that money for you. We were really good about getting the advances. The advances were $1,000 per employee up to $10,000 that you don't have to pay back. And we were good at getting people the monies. Yep. And it sounded scary because the EIDL loans, typically it could be a $2 million loan and with security. well, we didn't have to worry about the personal guarantee and the security. It was just their right. So they're just letting you know, don't worry about it. God, that was a long-winded answer.
It's great.
You can do this one. I used a HELOC of my primary residence to purchase an investment property. Any tax deduction advantage I can take?
Well, I'll start with what you can't do. You can't use that HELOC interest as mortgage interest on your Schedule A because it, yes, it's secured by your home, but it wasn't used in the home.
Used to be you could use it for anything.
Yep.
Now it has to be used to improve or buy your house.
So, but what you would do, say you bought an investment property, you would apply that mortgage interest, that HELOC interest against that investment property. I'm supposing that you're renting it out and have rental income. Well, now you have mortgage interest to apply against that. Mm-hmm. So that's where you're going to take it. If it's some other kind of non-income producing property, you can still take it on Schedule A under investment interest. That becomes a little harder to deduct because you have to have investment income to offset it.
You can just put this on your Schedule E, right?
Yeah, I would definitely, if it's a rental property, I would definitely put it on my Schedule E.
Make it easy. Save yourself a lot of heartburn. Even though it's a HELOC, you can't write it off. It's like if you're paying for your kids' education and stuff like that, you can't write off the HELOC interest anymore. But if you put it back into your house, you can. Or if you use it for investment property, a lot of accountants don't realize this. You treat it as an investment expense, even though it's a HELOC on your house. Mm-hmm. It's just a loan. It's just secured by your real estate. That's all. There's lots of commercial loans that you get that they'll say, hey, I want to be able to put a deed against your house. Yeah, if I was private lending to somebody, I might say, I want your personal residence. I don't even want to put a mortgage against the property I'm loaning on.
Yeah, the one thing you're going to want to do when you're ready to file your tax return, you've gotten the 1098 for this HELOC. You're going to want to write on there, or at least let your accountant know that this interest is for that investment property.
And somebody just said, what if I did it? What if I used it for a flip? So the interest on a flip would be deductible.
It would still be deductible. Well, yeah.
Interest would be, but they're not going to have income until they actually
sell. Correct. So normally we would apply that to cost of goods sold. So you will get to deduct it when you sell that property. It's going to increase your basis in the property.
A flip is just like owning inventory in a mini mart. So it's Cheerios. You're putting boxes on the shelf and somebody's buying it. So it's no different than your grocery store buying things on credit. You would you wouldn't put it in as part of the basis. You'd put it in as a cost of goods sold.
Most of the time we do elect to treat it as basis.
Really? Even the interest?
Yeah. Otherwise, it all works out to be the same way.
It's the same thing otherwise. Yeah. Otherwise, what if you didn't sell and you wanted to write off the interest?
Oh, we could do that. Yeah.
Yeah. It depends on, like, maybe you're just flipping a whole bunch. But...
Since we're usually flipping in C corporations, there's usually no advantage to that.
Mm-hmm. Somebody says, is it better to use a HELOC to buy investment property or should I go with a lender? You're going to get a much cheaper interest rate on a HELOC than you are if you're doing an investment loan. Right now, my best investment loans are still 5%, 6% on a HELOC. You're probably getting it cheaper.
Yeah, you just need to have, as long as you got plenty of equity in your primary residence, I think I'd go with a HELOC.
Mm-hmm. Somebody says, if I sell my rental property, how do I optimize my tax deductions? You 1031 exchange it, Cindy, and don't pay any tax. Roll it forward. So you don't have to pay tax. You just have to buy more real estate. Or if you take that money, you could also put it in a qualified opportunity zone, or you find other real estate to offset. Well, this would be capital gains. Mm-hmm. You're going to find something else, capital losses to offset it.
And that's one of those cases where you want to talk to somebody before you actually do it, because you can misfire on that sale and disqualify yourself from certain things like the 1031 exchange.
Mm-hmm. Somebody who says, what form should I use, loan to the LLC, if I use money from a HELOC to buy investment rentals? Technically, it's all going to end up on your tax return. So your HELOC, you're just taking the money and it's going to be part of your capital account that you put into an LLC if you're using it on that property. And then any interest on it is just going to be an expense that's going to be the LLC's, right?
Yeah, we don't want to bifurcate that interest into interest received and interest paid.
No, gets to be a pain. All right. So that was a good question. What is the cost of setting up a qualified opportunity zone? Well, you're not actually setting up it's an opportunity zone fund that you set up, and then you invest in qualified opportunity zone property. The fund, it's talk to one of our guys. It's less than $3,000. to do the fund. But what you're really doing is you're setting up an LLC and you're making a tax election. So you're doing two things. And somebody says, for investment property, are HOA fees deductible? On investment property, that's an expense.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah. So yes. Should I use my HELOC for a down payment on investment properties? Cheap money. And your investment properties, especially if you're a real estate professional, this is the year. You have two more years of this where you're living in the vita loca of all great real estate. And real estate market's going nuts. There's no inventory. The cost of wood has gone through the roof. It's up like it's double digits. It's up 30%. There's a lack of housing. The poor are getting hosed. Elderly are getting hosed. People with disabilities are being hosed. Veterans are being hosed. Transitional housing people are being hosed. We need to help those folks out. So I mean, that's a big part of what I do in my investing, but it's just huge. And then you have this 100% bonus depreciation until the end of 2022. There's never been a better time to buy real estate than right now. The numbers are ridiculous. If you ever come through, I teach a class. Actually, I'm teaching it on Saturday, Infinity Investing. If you ever want to dive into the numbers, if you're a numbers geek, then at the beginning of every one of those, I break down the numbers from the Fed. We go through the Federal Reserve economic data numbers, and it's ridiculous right now. There's no pre-foreclosures because nobody can, right? People are not missing their payments because they're not spending a bunch of money on credit cards. Rents have gone through the roof. Real property's gone through the roof. There's no inventory. It's never been more expensive to buy a house. It's absolutely nuts.
So how do you feel about selling in this market and sitting it out until the next great real estate collapse?
Because there's no end in sight of this growth. Somebody says, are negative rates come to the U.S.? How would that affect borrowing rates? We're already at zero or zero to 25, and I can't see us going negative like Japan. I actually had a buddy that his company was acquired by Japan, and they shuttered it, his division, because it was cheaper. Like they made more money off the negative interest than they would make on actually running the business. So it's weird what it ends up doing. I can't see us going negative.
Yeah, I have a hard time seeing banks going negative.
Mm-hmm. Somebody says, what's the current definition of a real estate professional? So I can just point you right to the section. It's 26 USC 469 C7. And there's a part one and part two. Part one is it's your primary work for one spouse. And the way that's defined is 50% or greater of their personal service time. The second part is 750 hours or more. And that just means in real estate, not on your real estate. That can be any real estate that's development, construction. You're a broker, you're an agent. Broker and agent have been used synonymous in that setting via the tax courts. So they said that you could be a real estate agent and you qualify. 750 hours. So if you have two jobs, one of them you're spending 800 hours and your real estate, to meet that 50% requirement, you'd have to be 801 hours, right? Which is more than 750 hours. So you'd qualify. But if you were at 800 hours in job one and 775 hours from all your real estate or from your real estate activities. And by the way, if you're an employee, you can't use those times unless you're a 5% or greater shareholder. So if you're like a partner in your real estate company or something like that. Part number two is you materially participate. And in this one is it's not just one spouse, it's both. And so I'm just going to write both spouses. And this is the least understood of all there's nine different tests. So I'm just going to write nine different tests. The easiest one is you spend 500 hours managing or working on your properties together. So each spouse could pay 250 or one spouse could spend 500 and then you don't have to worry about it. Technically, there's no hour requirement on material participation if you self-manage, for example. But get this, this is per property. So you have to spend 500 hours per property unless you aggregate. How do you aggregate, Jeff?
You make an election saying, I'm going to treat all my investment properties as one activity.
Yep. So you guys just got more than most accountants know. And it's not a hard test. You just keep your time. So like, again, somebody who works in real estate, it's easy. You're going to hit that part one. And then your spouse maybe manages your other property. Boom, you're good. if you're single, if and you're in real estate, and then you have managers that manage, technically, so long as you spend at least 100 hours a year, and nobody else is spending more than 100 hours on your property by themselves, then you're good. So you're going to be a real estate professional. And all that does is it locks your losses. It makes all your passive losses into ordinary losses from real estate activities. So you can depreciate the heck out of your properties, offset all your income. How do we get there? Somebody asked, they're a CPA and they want continuing education. Yes, we do qualify. What I would say is when you're going to come to a course is you let us know, because we have some hoops to jump through to get your hours. On some of them, all you do is you report the and give the syllabus and they'll credit you the hours. But a lot of them, we already have it pre-approved. Right. And we just have to let them know prior to you attending that you're going to attend. Can you talk about the downside of aggregating properties? Yeah. So the downside of if you have a bunch of rental real estate and you have a bunch of losses that are locked into a property. So let's say you have a bunch of loss carry forward and you're not a real estate professional and you decide to aggregate all of your properties together, then those losses are locked until you dispose of all of your properties.
That's the one downside I see.
Yep.
And this is usually happening once you've already had a bunch of passive losses and then decide to become a real estate professional.
We would be looking at that before we ever make the election. We run the analysis. And so you're going to do that. Let's see. Somebody says, I am a single owner LLC that owns a property in a land trust. What are the options for me to sell the house to get the $250,000 exclusion? The question really is, did you live in it as your primary residence two of the last 5 years? If not, then it's an investment property. You can 1031 exchange it. Do you know that you can 1031 exchange and do a 121 exclusion on the same property? It's kind of fun. If you guys like this stuff, you'll like tax-wise. I'm not pitching it today. We're not talking about it. But if you want to, like, if you like that sort of everything from the solar to the real estate professional to how to use nonprofits and all that fun stuff, the tax-wise is actually really fun. I teach it twice a year and we record it. So we're already going late, aren't we?
What? It's just now 4 o'clock.
Jeff is like Biden. In the middle of the debate, he's looking at his watch and he's tapping it. He's looking very impatient at me. Just teasing. All right. I have insurance policies in India and would like to bring the money once they are matured. Do I need to pay taxes on this money? That is the most funky question I think I've had in a while. So things that you have to know. First off, it depends on where you're a citizen and whether you're a resident of the United States. Because if you're not a resident of the United States, you don't have a green card, or you're not a citizen here, then it really doesn't matter. It's up to India. Otherwise, you're just bringing money in the United States, and you know, we really don't care.
We need to add a graphic that says, it depends.
It depends. But if you reside here, then the U.S. says, we're going to tax all your money anywhere. But insurance proceeds or loans are not taxable. But bringing cash into the United States, if you're here, you have to be careful because the IRS might say, hey, it sounds like income. I actually had this happen to a client, and he was a very large distributor of hardware goods and other materials. And what had happened was a couple million dollars got parked in his company because he worked with Lowe's. He did like ton of, I won't say all the stuff he supplied, but the IRS tried to tax him on it. And he said, it wasn't mine. You know, it's basically, it was a deposit that was sitting here because they didn't want to deal with the transfer of money all the time. And it was just kind of silly. And we won. It wasn't all that hard, but it was like still annoying. So here's what you do if you're bringing non-taxable income. So I'm assuming that when you say that they're matured, they have cash value and you want to borrow the money from the cash value. There's a designation that you can get from a chartered accountant in India that says the monies have been paid. Actually, I know where it is. I could actually look it up real quick. It's going to make my screen go nutty, but what is it called? I was just looking at this because you'd have it's non-resident Indian and a person of Indian origin. And where is the form? There's actually a document. It's a 15CB. And that basically says, hey, all the taxes are paid on it. We're good.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can find this. What did I do with that? Sorry. I managed to lose all my questions because I'm dragging them all hither to. All right. So anyway, that was really exciting.
No, I looked at that question like, what?
Yeah. No, I get it. And the other thing that you have to look at is when you're a non-U.S. citizen and you pass here and you're leaving it to somebody, if you have assets in the United States, there's only a $60,000 exclusion. So the United States is going to tax the heck out of it. So what you do is you loan the money from offshore and you make sure that the asset isn't here, because a loan isn't, you don't own it, right? You're just borrowing it. So there's the asset that's in the United States becomes substantially less. We would deal with this a lot when foreigners buy real estate, for example. We tend to say, don't just come over here and buy it. It's a $3 million property. If you pass away, they're going to take $1 million out of it. Loan the money, buy it, and then you only have to worry about the appreciation because the loan always gets repaid. What did I do? I lost myself. Moved my screens around. All right. Regarding Toby's comment about concern of locking up PALs, if I now declare I'm a real estate professional, what if I file 2020 and 2021 tax returns as a real estate professional and then file 2022 as a passive investor? Would it unlock my PALs in 2022?
No. Well, I say no, but that election to aggregate your properties is typically irrevocable unless there are substantial changes to your circumstances.
We looked at this.
Yes, we did. Yeah, have.
You have to say a material change in circumstances too. I remember we just did that.
Yes.
Oh, what was it? Yeah, it was. It was a substantial change. It was
a professional on maternity leave.
Yep.
Who did not work many hours in the past year.
Yeah, so you'd have to show something changed. And a material change just means, hey, I'm not just doing this for tax reasons. I actually, something switched that caused me to lose my real estate professional status.
Now, it's possible to be a real estate professional. If you only own one property, there's no aggregation happening.
No, but you've got to work your hours on that one property.
You do have to work your hours on that one property.
For your right. participation, or you're self-managing that one.
And property. That's you'll find that's a lot of hours to put in.
Okay, so let's just say that I have one rental property and I'm a realtor. I'm meeting my 750-hour test in more than 50% because I'm a realtor. And then I have this property, but I'm self-managing the property. I meet the material participation test without having any hours. So you wouldn't have to aggregate, nor would you ever aggregate one property.
Right.
Yeah. Now, if you have somebody managing it, let's say I own two properties out of state, then I have to spend 100 hours total on the management activities of those properties. And nobody can spend more than 100 hours on those properties cumulative. So you're not going to have a problem with the property manager. They're probably going to spend about 10 minutes on it. I mean, I always play with your cord. So Jeff, I always grab Jeff's cord and start moving it around. Then he grabs it, moves it around. Can't help it. What if you work in construction industry? Does that qualify as real estate professional? Yeah, Craig, it's almost always going to. If you're in construction, it says construction, reconstruction, development, redevelopment, anything that involves like the guys that actually gripe the hardest, because in 1986, the law was changed that made PALs come about. And all the people that actually worked in real estate said it's not fair to make all real estate passive when that's how we make our living. And they carved it out. Construction guys were number one.
The biggest areas I see that are disqualified are usually real estate financing, lenders, stuff like that usually don't qualify.
They don't count. Right. You have to be involved in the sale of the property. There was a lender that did. It was weird, though, because they were actually working on the transactions. Mm. So your level, if you're just a lender, no, but if you're involved in the transaction, then maybe. What form should you complete to show that you're making an aggregation election?
It's not a form. It's actually an election. It's an election statement. You say that you're making that election to aggregate your properties, and then you list what properties you're aggregating together.
Mm-hmm. Going back to our friend Lily, who is saying, hey, I'm a single landowner. To hell, yeah, if you lived in it for two of the last 5 years, then you qualify. And yeah, if it was your primary residence, so it's not just living in it, because some people have two and three residences. Like Jeff has his six mansions all around the country that he lives in. You have to pick one of them as a primary residence. That's the one you can 121. You can do a 121 exclusion every 2 years. So if you've lived in it for 2 years, it's not the last 2 years either.
Like no.
I could 121 something, and I could have rented it out 2 years since I moved out and still get the 121 and the 1031. So if you lived in it for 2 years, Lily, it's something that you should be talking to us about. We can make sure that you don't get dinged with the tax. And the example I sometimes give is, let's say that you're in the Bay Area, you bought a house for $500,000 and now it's worth $3 million. So your gain is, let's say that you married filing jointly. So you have a $500,000 basis, $500,000 capital gain exclusion. So that's your 121. This is your basis, which means your total tax would be you're going to have tax on $2 million. That would be 20% plus 3.8 net investment income tax plus 13% state. So you're getting the snot kicked out of you. You're going to pay about $720,000 tax, which equals ouch. So that would suck, right? If we don't want to pay any tax at all, then what we do instead is we still get the 121 exclusion, but we make it into a rental property before we sell it. And then we 1031 that into something else. And maybe we 1031 $3 million. Our basis moves up to 1 million. So we get the benefit of the capital gain exclusion. So if you know how the 1031 exchanges work, and then we rent this one to somebody else for usually 3 to 6 months, and then it becomes your personal residence. And what we did is we just saved $720,000. You have to do it in that form. Like, you have to do it systematically. And the IRS is fine with it. What they say is, if you 1031 into a primary residence, your intent has to be to make it an investment property first. And they show that intent by renting it. But then you can't do another 121 on that property for 5 years. Will Biden be able to remove the 1031 exchange opportunity? No, Biden can't write laws. And you're going to have more than likely a split Congress. So they're not going to be able to do anything. They're just going to sit around and yell at each other and do nothing. But Biden can't do nothing. The president doesn't. He can't do nothing. That sounds great. President cannot write laws. He can do executive orders and pretend, but doesn't count. If I buy office supplies and inventory for my business with my personal credit card, can that be the owner's equity?
So if you buy supplies, inventory with your credit card, that's going to be a deduction for the business. You're going to want to give those receipts to your business, and they're going to reimburse you for the difference. Or like you said, you could put it into some kind of owner's equity, or you could make it a loan to the business. There's a couple different ways you can handle this, but it's always going to be an expense to the business.
Mm-hmm. Can it reimburse you?
Oh, absolutely.
Yep. Hey, look at that. Somebody says, thank you for the Coffee with Carl YouTube video recommendation. Carl's a fantastic dude. I also point you to Tony Talks. Tony's funny. Tony started with us, got out of the military. She comes in and she was a receptionist years and years ago. And over the years, she became an administrative assistant, a law coordinator, moved up, got all of her certifications, became an enrolled agent, and now oversees our professional tax department, the guys that do all the planning. Mm-hmm. And she gets it because she's worked quite literally just about every position here. And she does a really good Tony Talks. So if you ever get a chance, go to our YouTube channel. These guys really do put their hearts and souls into those things. So you'd have to see it because it's really nerve-wracking to record or to talk in public. The first time Carl did it, I remember he sweated so bad. Just putting him on camera, it was literally pouring off his head. It was pretty funny because he's a really large person too. He's like a big guy. He's a lineman. So he's just like, I wanted to put a sponge on his head. That was kind of fun. I think he would have crushed me if I did. He'd probably just sit on me or something. I'd be no more. Somebody said on a 121 exclusion. Sorry, I'm going to switch to the little Q&A sign. On the 121 exclusion, do the 2 years have to be consecutive? No. It's 24 months out of the last 60. So it's actually, I think they could actually go to days. I think it's months, but technically the IRS will go all the way down to days to count. Here's a good one. Somebody says, what is the amount I can charge off for a truck use for business? Can I use 179? Any thoughts on that being available in 2021? Yeah, 179 is fine. You also have a bonus depreciation.
Bonus is probably better.
Mm-hmm. Because 179, if you drop below 50% use for business, it becomes all taxable to you.
And there's also repercussions if you sell the vehicle.
It's income, ordinary income back to you. Yep. September 30th is the ending. And which year do I file under 2020? I have no idea what that means.
I
know what that is. That must be your corporate tax return. And you're filing for the year that it starts. So it would be... You'd be farting for this year. You'd be filing for 2019, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we get in those arguments with people. I had one guy like yelling at us, and that guy couldn't figure out which tax year it was. What year you could have started, even though the business started towards? Yeah, it was just crazy. Sorry, threw off.
Going back to the question about can it the 121 can it be broken up? I'd say the only thing you don't want to do is have the periods be too short. Because then the IRS says, well, that's not your primary residence.
yeah, you could get into a situation where like you live in it, move. There are exclusions for people that travel for their work or that are doing military.
Yes.
And you could have periods of deferment too. Like you could go up to 10 years.
And there's also going along with that, the if you're forced to move because of job relocation or something, it can be shorter than the 2 years.
Somebody says, what about S&C Corp? Is it good for flipping houses? That's what I have now. Yeah, absolutely. That's what you want it. You want it in a separate taxpayer. So it could be an LLC tax as an S Corp, LLC tax as a C Corp. It could be a limited partnership that's disregarded to a corporation, which it sounds crazy, but it's actually a thing. We're starting to use those in California because they just came out with a ruling that allows us to do it and avoid some of the excess tax. There's some crazy stuff. What we know for sure is that you don't want it on your personal 1040 as a Schedule C when you're flipping houses. It's just, you don't do that. Do you guys specialize mostly in real estate taxes? What about stock trader? Nope. That's where we started was the stock trading, Sam. Mm-hmm. It's just stock trading has literally one way that I would tell you to operate. And that would be to always put your stock account. I would say if you're just getting started and you're making less than $10,000 a year, you could put it in a C Corp or an S Corp. Otherwise, you're always going to put your stock account into a vehicle that is a partnership for tax purposes. So an LLC taxed is a partnership with the corporation as its general partner, because you cannot write off anything on your personal taxes anymore because miscellaneous itemized deductions went bye-bye. Somebody says, can I claim 121 in two properties if I lived in two properties within the last 5 years and 2 years in each? You can claim one 121 exclusion every 2 years. So if you lived in one property, you would sell it, the one that's the longest. Otherwise, you could possibly lose. It's like if I lived in a property 4 years ago and I sell the one I moved out earlier, now I'm going to be in my sixth year when I sell the last ones and I wouldn't be able to do it. So we can map that out for you if you're having trouble with it. Could I take out $100,000 from my current 401k according to the CARES Act and roll it into a different QRP without tax consequences?
Yes.
Yeah, we'll make it easy. Yeah, what I'm thinking is maybe they do the early distribution. So they take this out and they're going to pay it back in 3 years. And you could put that into a IRA or QRP. And they treat it as a trustee-to-trustee transfer. It's not like it even went into your name. Somebody says, I put my house into a non-revocable trust. Does that affect my tax base? It depends on whether it's intentionally defective for tax purposes. So if it's an IGIT, intentionally defective for tax purposes, or an intentionally defective grantor trust,
correct,
technically, then it doesn't matter.
There's my buddy called him an IGIT trust.
An IGIT?
Yeah, he's from Mississippi.
You're an idiot.
Yeah, exactly.
My dad was from Alabama, so I'm allowed to do that, guys. I always think, I don't know why, but I think of the water boy. And that was Louisiana. Yeah, I know, but every time my brother lives in Louisiana and he drives over to Mississippi all the time. So he's always going and doing those car things on the sand there, right, in Gulfport. But I was thinking, I immediately start making bad accents and I apologize. It's probably wrong of me.
Yeah, I'm from Kentucky, got relatives from Tennessee, and I'm always doing it.
You're an idiot, Jeff. You're an idiot.
I got hillbilly relatives, so I got the right to do it.
You're an intentionally defective grandeur trust. Can you imagine that at a party? No, you're a self-settled grantor trust.
But yeah, usually with that is irrevocable trust, unless it's got that IGIT paragraph in it. That stuff now is owned by the trust itself. Mm-hmm. It ain't yours no more.
That's funny. Can I do a QRP plan in 2020 and then take out non-interest loan payable in 3 years? You have to do it this year, yeah. So you'd have to put the money in and then take an early withdrawal. I think you can. I don't know why you wouldn't. The law is pretty straightforward, as long as it was because of COVID. So let me rephrase this. If you roll over an existing plan, I don't think you have a problem. If you make a contribution this year, I think you're going to have an argument. Like, I think you're violating the spirit of the law, which is, hey, you can take money out of your plan because COVID's so tough. But if you're putting money into the plan after COVID, kind of defeats that argument. So what I'd more likely do with you is if you put money into it, I'd borrow half of it out and you have a deferment period for the rest of the year. And then you have a 5 year payback and pay it at 4%. You're paying it to yourself anyway. And this falls under the adage, pigs get fat and hogs get slaughtered, right? So don't violate the spirit of the rule. So technically, I suppose you could, but I don't think I'd do it. If I use a credit card to purchase stock, can I write off the interest I'm paying on the credit card if I incur losses?
When I read this question, I was thinking, I don't know that I would ever do this because most credit cards have an extremely high interest rate.
Yeah, not only that, it's not just the credit card. It would be considered an investment expense and you can only write it off against investment income.
True.
So you wouldn't be able to write it off if you have losses. But it makes me immediately think of a case that was on trader status where the guy was buying on margin. So he was paying interest and he was disallowed his interest deduction because he didn't qualify as a trader. He needed $15 million worth of transactions. I think that's Frederick Mayer case, if I'm not mistaken. I could be. I'd messed up the midnight train to Georgia thing. Never lived that one.
So to answer your question, yeah, you could do this. I don't know that I'd advise it.
You could do it, but you're not going to get to write it off if you have losses. You have to have income, investment income. And I don't know. I think it would probably carry forward until you do have the income. I don't think you lose it. I just don't think you can use it. I'm not certain.
We have the same issue with a margin account rather than a credit card. Mm-hmm. But I would think at least the interest rates would be lower.
Yeah, but still, it's just silly. Don't do it. He could be doing a
credit card. I don't buy a margin.
Well, the credit cards could be zero.
Could be.
Or yeah. It could be some really low amount, but I still wouldn't do it.
And you get the miles.
And you get some miles. Don't get ideas. I still wouldn't do it because you're gambling. Like, yeah. I'm all for investing. I'm all for all these things. But, you know, if you're going to, the only time I'm going to use credit on something is if the asset itself is going to be paying off the interest. And there's no way this, like, if I had a really low interest credit card, let's say I had a 2% credit card and I had a 3% dividend paying stock, maybe I would do it. Mm-hmm. But I can't see that being the situation.
And we do leverage investments. We have rental real estate and so forth. And
but the real estate needs to pay for the interest.
Correct.
If it doesn't, then you're running a huge risk. And again, we've just seen so much. Like, I've never seen a foreclosure that didn't have a loan. And I've never seen somebody go bankrupt that didn't have a debt to somebody else. And so if you can keep the debt to a minimum, you're going to be fine. So I know you think you're going to take it and you're going to make 30% interest. You might, but there's a good chance you're not. On average, you're going to make somewhere around 7 to 10% a year. So don't screw around with it. Your credit card, the average interest rate is 18%. That was according. I remember looking this up for one of my classes. It's really high. It sucks. Don't do it. All right. Somebody says, what is the CARES Act schedule for repaying the 100,000 401k withdrawal? So there's two of them. One of them phased out in September, which was the loan. And that's a 5-year payback with a year deferral. So it's 6 years. The early withdrawal is you have 3 years from the withdrawal. I think it might be the tax year. So it might be 2022, December 31st of 2022. I have to really nail that thing down because I'm still not 100% certain on it. Is it 3 years from the withdrawal or is it third tax year? Yeah, you're doing the same thing I do.
I want to say they wrote it like some of the others that it was 3 years from December 31st of the year you took it out.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. I think it's three tax years.
Yeah.
So that would give us till.
So you took out something in 2020, you'd actually have till.
You take it out in 2020.
You'd have to have it repaid.
Yeah, you'd have to have it back by 2022. Otherwise,
the end of 2022.
Yeah, because you're going to pay tax in it in 2020, 2021, and 2022, which is stupid.
And then when you get to amend all your returns.
Yeah,
you get to
amend them, yeah. Theory. I probably just wouldn't report it, but that's me. It makes me mad that they're doing that. I don't think the IRS is right.
I don't either.
So you're supposed to pay it back by the end. So I would say, Patricia, I would email it in and we'll give you a written response so I can look it up. But I think it's going to be December 31st of 2022. That's my understanding. Somebody's asking a crazy question about Boot. Let's see. Can I take Boot on a 1031 exchange but dispense with the tax with a large charitable donation and or a 529 plan? 529 plan is not going to give you a deduction. The large charitable contribution, though, absolutely would. In fact, you can donate up to 100% of your adjusted gross income this year. Somebody says, is there a difference in a loan to your corp versus a capital contribution? Yes. Jeff?
A loan to your corporation, you can get back tax-free. A capital contribution is now the corporation's money, and the only way to get it back is through dividends or salary.
You can buy back your stock, and it's return of basis, right?
Yeah.
But it's easier to do a loan. But it's supposed to be paying. If you loan money to your corp, you're supposed to charge interest if it's more than $10,000. In fact, they're going to impute interest on you if it's more than $10,000. If Biden gets in, how far back can they go with tax changes.
Yeah, I don't think they can go past 1915.
They can't go back retroactively, guys. Everybody's always worried that they're going to do stuff that's going to affect us. No, they can't do that.
The times I've seen them go retroactive is things that benefit the taxpayer.
Yeah, you're allowed to do that, but they can't do a governmental taking. Like,
no.
Like, hey, guys, you know, if you sell all your capital assets, it's 20%, and then say, nah, 40, 50. Yeah, no, they can't do that. Oh, somebody says, Toby mentioned it, but I wasn't writing it fast enough. $10,000 annual earnings options. What? $10,000 options earning. If under 10,000 option, I don't know what that was. Maybe I was going crazy. No, if it's more than a $10,000 loan, you have to pay interest on that loan. It doesn't matter who it's to. So if any loan, to, like if I loan money to Jeff, even if I say, oh, it's free, they don't let you do that.
IRS actually calls that a gift loan, that $10,000
or less. They let me pay taxes, though I received interest. If it's less than $10,000, they let you do it. If it's over $10,000, then they say, aha, you have to pay interest.
I think the reason they named it a gift loan is because every commissioner has had one of their kids ask to borrow money that's never been repaid. So
yeah, so now they're still stuck on this 121. Can I claim 121 in two properties if I lived in two properties within the last 5 years,
we talked
2 years
about that
in each? Yes, but you can't do more than one. Like I can do 121 in 2020, but then I cannot do another one until
2022.
Yeah, 2022. So I have to wait 2 years. I'm going way over. So everybody's going to get mad at me because I told them I'd be done at four or something. I'm pretty close-ish. There's a lot of questions coming in. Now I don't feel guilty. What happens for tax purposes if I want to sell a property that was in an LLC? Do I need to transfer it back to myself? This is going to be cool because I'm going to play lawyer on you. What do you say?
I'm going to say no, you don't have to transfer it back. You sell it in the LLC.
Except an LLC isn't a tax designation. What if it's a corporation, right? I just love this stuff. What if that LLC is owned by a 501c3? Okay, that's just being evil. Let's just assume that this is flowing to your 1040. Then you don't have to, you don't have to worry about it. I'm just being mean. Every time I see LLC, I think of all the lawyers out there that there's a listserv where we literally make fun of judges that call them limited liability corporations. And it's just brutal. Every time there's an opinion, they go, hey, look at this guy. And I'm like, they're probably a divorce lawyer. They don't know any better. They're picking on them. All right. Somebody says a relative loan, $10,000 in 2017, pay it back in 2019 without interest. I have no idea what that means. You're okay, I'm sure. Is essential duty pay taxed for COVID crisis? Do you know that one? Is there an exception from?
I don't know of any exceptions for that. I'm talking about, I'm thinking first responders or something like that.
Yeah, there is this. There's some weird little things where they exempt certain types of pay from taxation. I don't know if this is one of them. So, Al, if you could email that in, let us take a look and we can read it up. I know Pyle would love to research that. All right, we're going really long. Do capital losses offset capital gains in a 1-to-1 ratio no matter what your earned income level? Yes. Would $1 of capital loss offset $1 of capital gain in the same ratio regardless of being short-term or long-term?
Yes.
Yeah. So what that means is if you have short-term capital gains and it's taxed at your ordinary rate and you're in the highest tax bracket, you could be looking at having a tax on that of 20% plus 3.8 plus your state. But if you have $1 of capital loss, even if it's long-term capital loss and long-term gains being capped at, short-term gains would be 37% plus, would you still be in the net investment income tax on it? 3.8?
How much?
3.8 net investment income tax.
I mean, you could be if you're over 200,000.
Yeah, so you could be looking at 3.8 plus your state. So you could be looking at a big short-term tax, but your long-term capital gain loss, your long-term capital loss would offset it. So even though it's being taxed at twice the rate of the long-term capital gains rate, that long-term capital loss still offsets it, which is why when you have short-term capital gains, you're going to see people saying, do you have any losses anywhere? Do you have anything that has non-recognized loss, long-term loss?
The one thing I don't like about this is that $3,000 of losses they allow you to take every year, they take it from the short-term losses first. When I would rather apply those short-term losses, hopefully against some short-term gains in the future, I'd rather take my long-term losses. Mm-hmm. They're worth less.
Well, we see that. Here's another one. And actually, I'll do this on this one. Let's say that you are husband and wife, or husband, or just like, let's just say, I'm just using husband and wife, but it could be for a single person. It's whatever the rates are, but husband and wife making less than $80,000, whatever that amount is, plus you have standard deduction. What is it this year? 24.8 or something like that?
Something like that.
So we know, I'm just going to call it 24,000. So we know that we have at least $24,000 where your long-term gain rate is zero for at least that 24,000, because your long-term capital gains rate is up to 80,000. So now we look around and we see unrealized gains. So you look at your stock account, and let's say you have unrealized gains of $20,000. What we do is we sell it and buy it right back.
And somebody's going to ask, wash sales do not apply to gains.
Yeah. The wash sale loss rule is for losses. So we get $20,000 of gain that gets added to our deal. So now we have $20,000. So our total income for that year is going to be, what was it, your long-term capital gains?
64, 80, back up to 84.
Yeah, you're going to be, well, 20. So it would be 4,000, so it would be 76,000.
Oh, yeah, I went the wrong way.
And a big chunk of that's going to be 0% from long-term gain. So you're still, you're only, your ordinary taxes are going to be on 56,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you just got tax-free money of 20,000. You're going to say, well, why would I do that? Because it resets your basis. So that $20,000, you're never going to pay tax on. So when you sell that stock at a gain later, it's going to be better off. Or if it loses money, you'll be able to take the loss. But whatever the case, we're now making sure that we never leave that money on the table. And that goes for whether you're in the 15% tax bracket either. So you want to make sure. Somebody says, I'm also a first responder. So thank you guys for for doing that. And let's look up. We'll definitely talk about it next Tax Tuesday for sure. If Patty, you can make sure. If nothing else, we'll just get you a response. I'll go dig up on it. My son and I both have solo 401ks. How can we partner in a buy and hold real estate investment without violating disqualified party rules?
Investing your 401k with your son's 401k, they are not disqualifying parties.
Mm-mm.
They are totally separate entities. So you can invest, you're going to form a partnership like Toby's drawing up now. We got an LLC that's taxed as a 1065.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the partnership's going to have to file a return. It's going to issue K-1s to the 401k plans, and they're going to put them in a file cabinet somewhere.
Yep. That's it.
But, you know, that's perfectly okay. One thing you need to remember anytime you invest with a 401k or an IRA, you got to put enough money into that investment when you get it, correct?
Correct. So, no, what Jeff says is absolutely 100% correct. You're not a disqualified party because it's not a party. It's another qualified plan. So the question is there any prohibition on qualified plans co-investing and working together? No. Somebody says capital gains counts your income first and not capital gains. Okay, I think that's what we did. So capital gains is 0% if you make 38 something. If you're a single person, it's gonna be a little, what is a single? You know, gosh, I have to find glasses. Maybe you can read it.
No, I don't have my reading glasses on too.
Oh, they're right over here. Now I don't feel so bad. So single, what is it gonna be? Close to 40,000. Oh, maybe it is. Let's see, capital gains. Yeah, 40,000 below. Up to 40,000.
Yeah. I'm going to be updating those soon. So
yeah,
our cheat sheets. So we'll be getting those out.
See, is there a prohibition of the father son working actively on the real estate investment from the retirement plans? Yes. You can't pick up a hammer. You can't use your personal service to make it more valuable. So that's a good one, but they can invest together. Passive investment, better way to put it. Last question. I know we're over, so I'm going to say we're going to answer this one and then we'll be done. For those of you guys who ask questions, I can see that they're catching up to you guys. There's a few that are hanging out. What we'll do is we'll continue to answer the questions and make sure we get them done. But here is the last question. So this is the last one. No more questions, guys. I have an HSA account from my employer. So that's a health savings account. The IRS maximum contribution for 2019. I don't know what the maximum is. That look like to you? $3,500, and my employer contributed $1,500. The IRS maximum contribution amount for 2020 is $3,550, and my employer will contribute $15. I'm allowed to contribute this November for both 2019 and 2020 tax years. You wouldn't get any benefit for 2019, would you?
Yeah. So HSAs and IRAs share the same deadline for making contributions, which is the original due date of your 1040. This year was a little weird because it got bumped back to July 15th. But
so it would have been July 15th.
So to make a contribution, like Toby said, you had till July 15th to make that contribution to your HSA for 2019.
Yeah, for 2020, you could do it. But for 2019, you couldn't.
So you could only put in an additional $2,050, and mm-hmm. it would be for 2020. And you would have up until April 15th of 2021 to do.
Yeah, unless they can provide you something that's weird that I've never seen before. It's 2020 only. So I wonder why they're saying that. What?
People are asking questions, Toby.
Stop it. I'm looking for a working partner to come in with immediate cash to save a portfolio of properties. Oof. Reach out to us. We have a bunch of private investors and stuff like that. So maybe we could point you to somebody, get you a bridge loan. Anderson Podcast, if you like listening to this stuff. What it says, can a father and son, the 401k, have a C-Corp as their entity manager? No, you guys can't. They can't be doing anything personally to benefit themselves. So they could have a C-Corp, but they can't be doing it. And realistically, they would violate the heck out of it if they were an owner in the C-Corp. So could they use a C-Corp? Third party C Corp, yes, but nothing else. Fair enough. All right, we've had enough. Toby needs to quit looking at the question and answer because they're still pouring.
Toby's had a long day.
Toby was on a webinar all morning, but it was fun.
Was it?
With Tom Ferry. It was actually really
cool. Oh, yeah.
Tom's a kick. He's a real smart guy. And he actually, like, I was scribbling stuff down. He thinks the same way that I do on the way that we process data. So it was kind of weird. It was like, wow, he thinks the same exact way I do. That's weird. Not too many people. You're like a number cruncher, but most people out in that world, they're so, how would you say it? It's nice to see someone who's very focused on systematic processes mm-hmm. like that. There's a reason why he's successful. All right. AndersonAdvisors.com podcast. You go there. You can always go take a look at our replays in the Platinum portal. So when you go to the podcast, you can go to iTunes or Google Play as well. If you just want to go to those, and there's our iTunes, there's Google Play. You go on there. It's the Anderson Business Advisor podcast. I have a whole bunch of really cool podcasts that we've done recently. Clint does a fantastic job. Michael does a fantastic job. There's so many that are in there that are just really, really cool. I tend to stick around with the guys that are the bleeding hearts out there that are doing some of the nonprofit work, but we've got some other ones in there too. Plus you get all your Tax Tuesdays. If you have questions, and especially if you didn't get your question answered tonight, by all means, send it in. You can send it in via the Tax Tuesday. Here, I'm going to do my last little star here. Tax Tuesday. You can always go to Anderson Advisors as well. But if you want a question answered, by all means, just grab that Tax Tuesday at AndersonAdvisors.com and shoot it on in. Jeff, thank you.
Thank you, Toby.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at AndersonAdvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast. And if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.